Hello and welcome along to Northumberland FA Podcast from the sidelines with myself, Gary Middleton, and special guest today, Regional Coach Developer for Women's and Girls, Emily Senior. Emily, great to have you on from the sidelines today. Can you just explain to everyone your current role at England Learning and some of your experiences within football?
Yeah, so great to be here, Gary. Thank you for having me. My experiences to date have been across the entire game. I'm currently a regional coach developer here in the North East, so from Yorkshire all the way up to the very top. And I help coaches, particularly female coaches, develop within the game. But as I say, across the game as a whole, I've worked from play phase through to foundation, YDP, and then right now I'm working at the senior level, so I've been at tier 5 through to 4 over the past few seasons, currently at York City Ladies, worked in all aspects.
Brilliant. Great, Emily. Emily, we're going to look today at maximising player engagement. For everyone listening in, what do we mean by maximising player engagement?
Yeah, for me, maximising player engagement is all about giving players the absolute best chance at enjoying and learning in the session. So utilising every moment in your session for enjoyment and learning. And I think we can sometimes go about that the wrong way, trying to get the two into one session. So for me, that's what maximising player engagement is.
And just to kick this off then, I suppose a good starting point would be the importance of our practice design.
Absolutely, yeah. So if we're going to maximise their engagement, we need to make sure that the practices that we put on provide ample opportunity to meet the outcomes that we're getting without much intervention from ourselves or over-intervention from ourselves. So can the practice design bring out repetition of skills and plenty of ball rolling time?
And I suppose a really good example of that we still see there is the use of lines and lots of weight and run. We want to try and take that out of our practice design.
Absolutely, and there's lots of ways that we can go about that. So we can think about, you know, parallel practices and look at different parts of the practice spectrum. It might be that we start to use small-sided games so that they've got more game time. And we put conditioned games into it. So we've got loads of different creative ways that we can go about approaching practice design now, that we don't need to be waiting and having lots of time without a ball in sessions anymore.
And just to explain to everyone listening, parallel practices, what do they look like and how do they work?
So as simple as we might have one practice area set up with a lower number of participants in that, and we can have the exact same design set up side by side. In doing so, it means that you've got less waiting around, less waiting for a turn, and more time on the ball. So the ball's rolling more, which equals more enjoyment. They want to be on the ball, they want to have more touches on the ball, or at least be involved in and around the ball, the movement away from it. And they can do that if there's two separate areas and not a high volume of participants on one.
And that type of practice, parallel practices, that can be set up in small areas. We've got a 3G on a Tuesday night, a quarter of a pitch, where we can have two areas set up alongside each other, can't we?
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be demanded by the size of the area, and it will depend on what the outcome that we're trying to get out.
Yeah.
If you know, we're trying to look at movement with the ball, then the smaller the area, the better. We're going to put them in more tight spaces, so we can have maybe three or four different of those areas in just a third of the pitch. So we can have as many as we want in the parallel practice piece, and it allows for more time for them to play and explore themselves, which means we can start dotting around all of the different parallel practices as they're going on and intervene when we need to intervene. Mm.
And that leads us on nicely to coaching interventions. If we talk about players being engaged within the sessions and the practices, what of our interventions need to look like?
And that's it. And if I take us back to at the beginning when we spoke about what is maximising player engagement, I think as coaches we know we want to help them learn, and we've got really good intention as coaches to want to help them learn. I think what we often try and link to that is that we have to give information, and if we give too much information and it's coming too often it's not going to have the impact that it needs to have, and a lot of it can become missed. So they're going to be picking up things in the practice themselves, exploring and picking things up that we're not seeing, and we need to recognise that observation can play a big part as well. But in terms of our interventions, they don't always have to be whole group. That's mm-hmm. the first thing.
Yeah.
We just spoke about parallel practices. It might be that while other groups are completely exploring by themselves, we're having a couple of little one-to-ones on one of the parallel yeah. practice.
Yeah.
That could be as simple as a drive-by when I just want to drop some information to them mm-hmm. because I've seen something happening. It could be that just one of the groups comes together and needs a bit of a moment
mm-hmm.
and we can intervene and have the discussions there. So our interventions can look very different depending on the needs of the people that we're working with. And my biggest advice on interventions would be don't intervene for intervention's sake.
Yeah.
Do
yeah.
it because we have purpose to give to the players. And that will be shaped around your outcome. So what do we want to get out of it? What's our focus tonight? What are we looking for within the session? And if we're seeing that a player's maybe not done that the first time, can we probably let it go that first time?
Yeah.
Second time, we might be thinking, right, this could be a coincidence. And then the third time, we might go, right, that's a pattern emerging now. That's mm-hmm. my moment to go and intervene.
Mm.
And then think about the way that you want to do that. Would yeah. it just be a one-to-one so that we're not having to stop the whole group's engagement? Mm-hmm. And if it can, pull that player out if you want to, or even better to keep them engaged, just have a little drive-by past them and
yeah.
and drop that information in there.
Yeah, and if it is a small group intervention, the importance of keeping that precise and to a short amount of time so the players don't get disengaged from the actual practice of what they're trying to learn.
Absolutely. Going in when you've already got clear in your mind what the point is that you're yeah. about to make, not going in as soon as you've seen it.
Yeah.
Give yourself a moment
yeah.
to understand what the point that you're trying to make is. Wait for the occurrence to happen again and then go in with your moment because it's already clear in your mind about yeah. how you're going to bring yeah. it to life.
Great advice that, Emily. Emily, I think it's important with what players as well, around engagement, is making sure that players are challenged. So challenging what players and giving them incentives, because if the practices is too easy, it isn't going to be engaging for the players. But on the flip side of that, we don't want to make it too difficult. So I think the importance of giving the players challenges, and also looking at differentiation within the group as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. Most of the disengagement that you'll see in a session, and even if I know a lot of people will point the finger towards behaviour,
yeah.
and it's negative behaviour from the player, but negative behaviour tells me disengagement.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. It's a sign of disengagement. And the disengagement comes from either being bored, and boredom's because it's too easy,
yeah.
or being frustrated, and frustration comes from too difficult. So they're your key signs that you're looking out for. That comes from your observation piece. So in terms of challenging those that are finding it a little bit boring, recognising that it's probably a little bit too easy for them early,
mm-hmm.
and then going in to set the challenges. Now, we spoke earlier about parallel practices. Why can't the parallel practices be different sized
yeah.
areas?
Yeah.
So depending what the outcome is, we might need a smaller area if we're trying to bring out a bigger demand. We might need a bigger area to make it more challenging, mm-hmm. depending what we're trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So in doing that, you can start to put individuals in the different areas to give a little bit more challenge to them. It might also be as simple as that one individual has an extra challenge and they have a few more different ways to different types of touches on the ball. Do they get a different type of touch to everybody else? Nobody else has to know about it because it can just be a little one-to-one conversation. They maybe have some targets set for them, or a certain amount of through balls that they must play in that game.
Yeah.
Anything like that that is going to give them something to go after, and that's the incentive piece that you speak about. It could be as simple as engaging the whole group with an incentive. If you're feeling like it's going a little bit flat and you've seen that the motivation level's dropped and everybody have a target that they've got to hit, you know, we need 10 within this time frame and we do that, or you've only got 6 balls remaining and we've got to do X yeah. in 6 balls.
Yeah.
So the incentives are key to maximising engagement, and that'll look different at the different age groups that you're working at as well, the type of incentives that you put in.
And I think it's key, the big thing around designing our practices is that what the players' needs are. which we've just touched on there, around different player challenges within your practices. You know your players and what them players literally need. Yes, thinking about setting the scene for the players as they arrive as part of the engagement, with the tactics board, whiteboard, with what sessions it, session aims on. How does that support player engagement, Emily?
Yeah, so look, every player, and you've just touched on it in the prior one as well, Gary. Every player has different needs and different wants as well. Like, what engages me? What do I want that really engages me? Some will take really well to physical demonstrations and want to see it in action. Some really do see things come to life with some visual examples on things like a whiteboard, a tactics board, or it might even be you've got cones out on the pitch so that they can see the ball moving, which looks like a mini pitch or a mini tactics board on the pitch.
Yeah.
So it just helps for people that have different ways of taking in information, and we don't want to make that heavy. We don't want it to feel like an onerous task that they've got to stand and listen at the beginning. But again, when we come back to clearing the point you want to make on the tactics board, is it just to show them the setup of the session? If it is, give yourself a minute max and then let's get them in. But it's definitely a really good aid, and you'll know if you've got individuals that really benefit from that, because the second you put it in, you'll see those that become more engaged by it. And others won't, and like I say, it's then knowing that you might have to adapt a little bit for those that don't take well to those. You might have to then add another type of method of showing once they're in the game, and that's okay as well.
Yeah, good. Emily, the use of questioning within our sessions. Yes, questions versus praise. And I think coming back to our coaching styles, how we include the players within that environment.
Yeah, and again, there is no right or wrong answer, because every group, every individual is going to be very different. So again, a use of all of them at the right time is definitely the best approach. Questioning is brilliant because it gives a little bit of ownership to the players. You're not just giving the answers, particularly for your younger players. Some of your senior players, they sometimes might need telling exactly how you want to go about things.
Yeah.
But for your younger players in particular, sometimes they're the light bulb moments.
Mm-hmm.
They need the question to get the answer themselves and feel a real bit of confidence from knowing it themselves and going, I did actually know that. And then that gives them another little boost. So the questioning is a really good piece to give them ownership and a bit of thought provoking. But then praise, right moments for it. So we spoke earlier about going in to intervene when we can maybe see a pattern of problems. So when something's not going right towards what we're focusing on, the same can go for praise. So let's not overuse it.
Yeah.
Let's not overpraise, because it loses its purpose, it loses its impact. But when we see the same encouraging signs towards our focus, maybe three times in a row from an individual, let's make sure that they know that and they know that you've seen it, because then they know what you want from them. Yeah. That's a learning moment as well, to know that they're doing it, and they'll take that away as well. So yeah, praise, questioning, different ways that we approach our own coach behaviours, really key to maximising engagement.
Yeah, and that use of questioning, it gives us the opportunity to see if that learning's taking place within them particular 100%. Individuals, doesn't it?
100%.
If they're answering the question the way we want it, we know that they've understood and they're actually demonstrating what we want to.
Brilliant. And that they're engaged.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that they're engaged,
Game related practices, Emily, that look like the game, the three R's?
Yeah, so do you want me to give a bit of a context to those three R's?
Yeah.
Yeah, so look, we've got our realism, repetitive and relevant. That's what we want to keep our practices, because if it is relevant to the game and the situations that they're going to see, again, depending on what your focus is, if it's relevant to the game, then the players are going to have a better understanding when they're taking that into the match themselves. Idea is, we're not going to be on the pitch with them.
Yeah.
So it needs to be relevant in their learning process that they can go and apply it without us. So it's really important that we do that, and ultimately they're there because they love the game. Mm-hmm. They love football. So by making it relevant to it, we know the engagement's going to be higher because they love playing. Yeah. I mean, how many times as grassroots coaches have we heard players come up to us and say, "Have we got a game tonight? Are we having a game tonight?" That's the part that they love.
Yeah.
But there is no reason why the practices that we design that maybe don't necessarily look wholeheartedly like the game end to end in the way that it's formatted on a weekend can't still represent parts of the game that we see.
Yeah.
So that's really important for engagement, and that's the realism piece as well, I suppose. And then repetition for me is huge when we're talking about maximising engagement. Mm. We talk about ball rolling time, giving lots of repetition towards a certain focus and objective is key for the learning process. If they're engaged in performing it again and again, then they're going to retain that information a little bit more. And when we spoke about, you know, the line practices that allow a little bit of waiting time, they're not having the opportunity to really repeat it again and again and not having to wait in between their repetitions, then they're going to start taking in that information a little bit better and being able to apply it themselves. So repetition for me is huge when it comes to maximising engagement.
Yeah, thinking about that repetition and the relevance, Emily, and we'll look at the practice spectrum, technical versus
skill.
I'm just thinking of where that sits within that engagement. As a player, if we were taking part, where would we want to sit as coaches? Because I always, a good saying, if when you look at your practice and if you'd want to take part in it, the players would probably want to do it as well.
Yeah.
So, just a little bit around the practice spectrum as well.
Yeah, no, it's a great point that you've made. And look, the one that I always go back to is if we think about purely technique when we talk about passing, everybody thinks of an old-fashioned line drill where we're passing to one another and we might change the side of the foot that we use, the surface of the foot that we use, and all we are practicing there is the technical side of it.
Mm.
And yes, you'll get lots of repetition, and yes, technically we might develop the passing, but is that game realistic? And in the game, there might be three or four players that I have to take touches past before I can play that pass.
Mm.
And my body shape's going to change from that. Speed that I'm approaching the ball is going to change. Everything's going to change. But adding things like interference into it, really key to start making it a little bit more relevant, especially if you're working with the younger end. They might not be ready for full pressure, but we can still add loads of interference to make it more game realistic. So there's other players that are passing beyond them as well, and we work around other players that are passing. Anything like that is still going to keep the technique improving. They've still got that repetition element there, but it's more realistic to the kind of situations they'll find themselves in the game. They're really important.
Brilliant, yeah. I mean, what kind of things might differ between the different ages, stages, when we talk about maximising player engagement?
Yeah, so when I think about it, look, like I said earlier, I've worked with player phase, the 4 to 6-year-olds all the way through to senior level. And the way that you maximise people is very, very different, depending on their age. So it might be as simple as knowing the things that they love away from the game.
Right.
So can we include some of the things that they love? You know, our youngsters might love superheroes.
Yeah, can dinosaurs.
Can we involve a little bit of that in the session? And it sounds silly, and I think sometimes as adults, we don't want to be a bit silly sometimes, but that is going to engage and it's going to grab their attention, particularly in the grassroots game. If they're a little bit newer to the game, it's going to grab their imagination and they're going to want to get involved. So that's one simple way that we might look at it. Whereas with adults, I think a big key way to engage players, other than a lot of the things we've spoken about when we're delivering the practice, is the way that you've built your relationship with them as well.
Yeah.
Like, do we know about what their personal life?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds so simple. Like, we do it in our day-to-day life when we're building relationships. But they then build a trust in you. And if they've got that trust in you, they want to engage for you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts there. It's as simple as that. But when they're in it, It's all the things that we've spoken about. Are we making it realistic to the game? Are we making sure that we've got clear coaching points and only going in with those when we're clear in our mind that we can do it short, sharp, concise?
Yeah.
Keeping everybody repetitive in what you're trying to bring out in the session.
And I think ultimately, Emily, if the players at any level, whatever level that we're coaching at, are enjoying the practices that we deliver, players will ultimately be engaged in the practices.
That's it, and it sounds so simple, yeah, doesn't it? Yeah. It sounds so simple, but we've touched on so many different points that kind of allows for that enjoyment.
Yeah.
And I think there's no coach that goes into a session and says, I'm going to make this session really not enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't happen. We all have good intentions, but there are so many little things we can tweak, like the way we set up the practices, like the way we manage our behaviours as the coach, that can really help bring out the engagement and the enjoyment, which ultimately leads to more learning as well.
It does, Emily. Emily, what would be your three key messages to take away from our chat today about maximising player engagement?
Yeah, so for me, big ones when we're talking about engagement is the coaching interventions. Really think about your timing and how you want to go and intervene. So that's a big one. Second one, enjoyment is key. So what can we do to keep ball rolling time high so that they can play the game that they love? Even if we've got a conditioned practice on that comes slightly away from what the traditional game looks like, how can we make sure that it's relevant to what we're trying to get out of it with loads of repetition?
Yeah.
And then the final one, don't be afraid to observe. Don't be afraid to observe because we are always keen to be the fountain of knowledge and just bestow all of that knowledge upon the players. But sometimes by observing and taking a step back, not only can you see the moments that they disengage, but you will also bring more impact when you go in to intervene. So don't be afraid to observe.
Brilliant. Emily, thoroughly enjoyed having you on From the Sidelines today. Thank you very much for joining us.
No, thanks for having me, Gary. Appreciate it.
Great. We'll see you soon. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.